Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable! Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Episode 58 of the Last Round Podcast. I'm Danny Z, and across from me is, damn, he's not here this week. This week in studio, I'm actually solo. Mike dished out on me. For some reason, he got scared of the airwaves this week and, was intimidated of our listeners. He was like, oh, I don't want to jump on this episode this week because all the trolls on Twitter came at me for my opinions. So I told him, just stay home, man. It's not worth it. Leave it to me. But taking Mike's place after this week's fights on Saturday at the MGM Grand and, of course, Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California, helping me this week in place of Mike's absence. He has his own podcast, which I listen to on the regular. Besides ours, you know, it's probably my second favorite one behind ours. Or maybe I should just say my first because he's helping me out this week. Southern California boxing fans and Southern California media are very aware of this guy, this man. He's always at the fights, at the StubHub, the Forum. I don't think you'll see him at too many PBC fights, but you'll see him at Golden Boy Fights, Top Rank. He's a big fan of the sport, probably the biggest fan in Southern California. And his podcast is called the Mr. Boxing Guru Podcast, which I don't know if he wants to be called Mr. Boxing Guru or Sal, but Sal, Mr. Boxing Guru, is my co-host this week. What's up, Sal?
Hey, what's up, Danny? Thanks for having me. And Sal is fine. Guru is just another troll job. How you doing, brother?
Good, man. Thank you. Like I said, thank you for helping me out this week since Mike sold out on me, but you know he'll be back eventually. But
that's the way it's supposed to be. We finally got rid of the Brit, man. That's what we wanted to. This was the master plan.
This was all.
I'm trashing the boxing run. I mean, the Mr. Boxing Guru podcast. This is it.
Mike, we've been doing this show for over a year, and this is my plan all along. I just never told him until tonight. It's over. I'm gonna lock the doors to the studio so he can't get in next time.
I love the guy.
But like I said, man, you know, thank you for helping us out this week as jumping on as our co-host. And, you know, before we dive into, fight reviews and all that stuff, you know, in this crazy sport of boxing, you know, like I mentioned, your name is Salvador. People call you Sal, but you have the nickname. A lot of people don't even know your first name. They just call you Mr. Boxing Guru.
Bro, I go to the fight and hey, guru this, guru that. That's how it is. Most people, I mean, if I probably won't even turn around for Sal when it's at an actual fight. So, yeah, it that comes with the territory. Like you said, we're very lucky that we're in Southern California, so we have access to all these fights. So, yeah, that's just the way it goes.
How did you land on that name? Did you think about any other names before that one?
No, you know what? I think it's more because of the normal 9-to-5, you know, ever since, like I'm sure you have, I mean, since you were a kid, you're a boxing fan, but of course, as you keep growing and as we got a little older, boxing wasn't as popular as most sports here in the U.S. So whenever it came down to boxing, you know, I was always a go-to guy, whether it was at my job, whether it was, you know, through family or whatnot. I was always so, I don't know, somewhere along the line, and, hey, guru this, guru that, and, oh, you're the boxing guru, and it just stuck, and I ended up making a Twitter handle, and ran from there.
Oh, I get it, man. That makes perfect sense, especially to guys like us. You know, I think we all share that same, you know, platform, especially within Hispanic families. Everybody comes to us for all the boxing news, like, hey, what's going on? Who's this cat? You know, who's this guy? And stuff like that, you know, so we're the main source of information.
That's true.
But so, you know, let's start from this past Saturday, like I said earlier, from the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, on Fox pay-per-view. Deontay Wilder gets the 7th round knockout over Luis Ortiz in their rematch to retain his WBC heavyweight championship of the world. Did you catch it, guru? What'd you think?
Oh, of course. I have to catch it. Look, I'm not a big fan of PBC, but I, you know, whenever there's a good fight or a fight of some substance like this card, and this card as a whole, you have to, you know, just tune in and watch it. So yeah, absolutely. I definitely watched it.
So what'd you think? And you know, on the scorecards, Luis Ortiz was winning on all three cards. Did you agree with that at the time of the knockout?
I agree. I think Deontay, like you said, he has that eraser. He has a big right hand, and that's all he was really waiting for. And that's what makes him special, because look, he's not necessarily the best boxer in the world. He has a lot of skill behind him. It just looks awkward because he's so big. But that's all he has to do. Like he says it himself, he only has to be perfect for 1 or 2 seconds. After that, it's over. And yes, I had him winning. I mean, most of his fights, he's losing, you know, till that big eraser comes to play and he gets rid of these guys.
Isn't it crazy that Wilder and Mike brought this up on Saturday during the fights, but isn't it crazy that, like, because you always forget about it, especially because, you know, obviously he's made it this far to the top of the sport, but, you know, he started boxing, I think, when he was, like, in his early 20s and right. Only had, I think, 20-something, 25 amateur fights, and then gets a bronze medal in the Olympics. Isn't that freaking crazy?
It is insane, but it just speaks of his athletic ability and just that raw power. I mean, you don't see it out there. I mean, what was the last guy that you could actually say he was just that brutally strong? I mean, I can't remember a guy. I mean, maybe Mike Tyson, but he looked the part. Deontay Wilder doesn't look the part. He just looks like a skinny kid.
Right.
I mean, yeah, he might be ripped, but he doesn't look like he's the guy that. If you see him in the street, he's not a guy that I'm going to say, okay, he's going to knock my ass out. I'm not going to mess with him.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, especially after this KO, a lot of people have been saying that, you know, he has that type of generational power. What do you agree with that?
He does, but at the same time, let's back off a little. I think we need to enjoy the Deontay Wilder that's in front of us. We need to stop comparing him to the all-time greats. Yes, he has that type of power, but let's keep the same energy when it comes to Deontay Wilder. Look, we all criticize the Klitschkos for the same thing. They pawed themselves into a fight, and they jabbed, and let's be honest, they bored you for 12 rounds or whatever it took till that opponent got tired and they were finally able to land that big right hand. Same thing with Wilder. Let's be honest, the fight, to me personally, the fight was boring. The fight was boring for the exception of those, you know, what, last minute of that fight where he finally landed that punch and that was it. Other than that, it was a very Cubanish fight, you know, where it was a Cuban guy winning the fight. He was beating him, but it wasn't necessarily exciting. So, you know, that's why I say, you know what, enjoy the knockout. He's a highlight reel type of fighter. He's a great fighter that I love to watch. Maybe not necessarily live, but I sure love the replays, the highlight reels of him as a fighter.
Did you pick him as you know, as winning the fight before the fight happened, or
yes, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I didn't think. Look, he had fought this guy. What was it? 2 years ago?
March 2018, I think. Last year.
Okay, 2018. Okay, so. He already had a very, I don't want to say suspect record, but Luis Ortiz hadn't really fought anybody of note. And to be fair, none of the heavyweights have. So, and there's always that thing where we really don't know how old he is. He looks older than 40.
Right.
And let's say he is 40. 40 is, it's a very, he's been a prospect in his 30s, and that's just doesn't fly. So, and the fact of the matter is that he had already taken care of this guy. Yeah, he might have had a little trouble with him before, but the ending factor was that he took care of him. He knocked him out, and he was done with it. And to do it again, and to somehow, you know, over glorify Wilder again, he deserves all the accolades in the world. But I think we're putting a little too much emphasis on this win. Yes, he did win, but he won against a very old, fighter that really doesn't have that many credentials to his name as a professional fighter.
You don't think, though, that, I completely agree. Obviously, everybody knows that, Ortiz, I think they say he's 40, but we really don't know, especially from, these Cuban fighters and right. Not just in general fighters, but Cuban athletes, baseball players and stuff like that. We really don't know their ages. But, I mean, do you really think age played a factor in, especially in this fight? I mean, because he was winning on the cards, and I thought he was winning. I mean, he looked actually pretty good until he got stopped.
I think it did. Look, it didn't help him. I mean, look how he looked in the previous fight. He was in the fight. He was, and arguably they were kind of going back and forth. This one, he was just kind of touching him, playing it as safe as he possibly could. And I think it did. I don't think it helped him. On the contrary, look what happened. Look how easily he knocked him out. It was no way that man was getting up from that.
No, that's so, right, yeah.
And again, he deserves all the credit in the world, but I think a lot of us are I even saw some people saying, look who the real hype job is between him and Golovkin. And again, they shouldn't try to take each other's credit. I think Deontay Wilder's a great guy, but let's not overdo a generation. Again, generational power, yes, but not as him beating all time. I think a Klitschko would have ran through, a prime Klitschko would have ran through Deontay Wilder.
I'm glad you mentioned the Golovkin, Wilder comparison, hype train or whatever, because I did see something about that on social media today. Can you talk about what that is, for our listeners, in terms of people comparing them to?
Well, the thing is, people are saying that Golovkin was a hype train, and I don't necessarily think so, because when you have a guy like Golovkin that arguably beat Canelo the first fight, and Canelo were putting him, in our mythical pound for pound list, and somehow a guy that fought two very close fight with the number one pound for pound guy is all of a sudden a blown up or hype job. I don't think it's fair to Golovkin. I think they did the best they could with the available opponents they had in front of them. They were able to unify with three belts, if I'm not mistaken, if mm-hmm. not all four. I don't remember. I don't think it was all four. But yeah, he was a legit guy, and so again, and so is Deontay. So there's no reason to really call either guy a hype job. I think we should just enjoy the fighters that we have as much as we possibly can, because later on, these guys are going to end up becoming legends. And what did we do? We trashed them while they were here.
No, absolutely, and just kind of wrapping that part up is saying that with people comparing Golovkin and Wilder, especially the last several years, is pretty much saying that when Golovkin stepped up and started fighting world class guys, especially, I mean, he was knocking out all the guys before he started fighting like a Jacobs, a Canelo and stuff, which is still right. He's still world class, of course, but what people were saying on social media, especially boxing Twitter, which boxing Twitter is a whole nother world. I mean, we know that. And we're saying that, that everybody thought that Triple G was going to be like the man in terms of the hype, knocking everybody out. And Wilder was going to be the one in the back seat. And now people were saying that, it's actually Wilder who's, who lived up to the hype, knocking everybody out. And Triple G, hasn't really stopped people. Like he did in like 2013, 2012, 2014.
Yeah, like I said, if that was the case, then knocking out who has Wilder knocked out? I mean, you could argue against each and every one of his opponents. In the last fight, when it was a bit more competitive, Luis Ortiz came in on short notice. When he did knock out Stavern, which is, in my opinion, probably one of his toughest tests, when he took the belt from Stavern, so he went all 12 with Severn. Yes, he came back and knocked him out, but again, that was a very short notice fight. Mm-hmm. When he did what he did with Areola, again, it was Areola. So so who's has really been his most legitimate prime fighter that Wilder has faced? Has it been Brazil? And again, that was another Olympian. I mean, he hasn't really fought, again, till he fights the other monster, which, again, I'm sure we'll get into a little later, Joshua, or not even a, a, I had your reasons because I think, you know, the height difference is just ridiculous. I don't think we can necessarily crown him. And again, I don't think it's necessarily his fault because he's tried fighting some of the big names. What was the other guy, I think a Russian guy that he tried fighting, but he
Povetkin.
Top 30?
Povetkin?
Yeah, Povetkin. Again, that would have been like a fight that I would have said, okay, he fought a legitimate guy. He deserves all the accolades in the world. But again, in my opinion, just not yet.
No, you're right. And you're right. And then at least, you know, I wanted that now that you're touching on the Povetkin one, that, because, you know, he was getting a lot of criticism, especially before that fight was going to be announced, saying you haven't fought anybody. Your record's like at over 30 wins and you know, there's no names on your record. You're undefeated and stuff. And you can tell that it started getting to him. So he made the decision, you know, with his management, PBC and all that stuff, and said, you know, I'll go fight Povetkin in Russia. And he was going to do it. I think it was all right. Signed and stuff. And then Povetkin, I don't know if you remember, but he got popped for steroids. So they had to cancel the fight. So at that point, at least for me, I knew, I was like, okay, well, at least he's willing to do it. Cause I mean, like going to somebody else's turf is already a big, you know, a big choice, but especially if you're going to Russia, I mean,
yeah, that's, you know, huge.
Even though Povetkin got popped, I started to give Wilder, you know, a lot more credit at that point, even though it didn't happen. Cause I was like, okay, well, he was willing to go not just anywhere, but to Russia to fight this guy. So who was at the time, who was one of the most dangerous guys in the division. So, I mean, and going back to this fight with the Ortiz, do you think Ortiz is a world-class heavyweight?
I think he is. I think when Golden Boy had him, I think they might have babied him a little too much, and I think that's probably one of the reasons why he left, because he was fighting in India most of the time, and now until he got to PBC, that was he able to, you know, maybe get the better opponents. You know, they were able to pay for better opponents for him, so maybe Golden Boy did it the service. So maybe they try to overdevelop him like they do a lot of the fighters. And it probably ended up hurting him in the long run.
So does Ortiz, can he still give good fights after this? Like who can he still have a good fight with in the division?
I think so. I mean, look, the I think Ortiz with whoever loses from the fight we have in a couple of weeks with Anthony Joshua and Andy Ruiz, I think it'll be a great fight. I can't remember the guy that the guy that beat Ariola last.
Kalnaki.
Yeah, him. He'll do a great fight with him. I mean, so there's still a lot of fights around him. Pulev, I mean, is out there. So there's still a lot of fights out there. Again, he's a very solid guy, but he's just a little older. He needs to maybe fight the lower top 10 of the division.
So is Wilder the best heavyweight in the division, in the world?
You know what? It's... At this point, I think he is. We don't know what's going to happen in a couple of weeks. Was it a fluke with Andy Ruiz and Joshua? I don't know. But, yeah, honestly, I think it is. Now, imagine a guy like Wilder touching, you know, Joshua's chin like he did Ortiz's.
Mm-hmm.
Can he handle it when he couldn't handle Andy's? That's something else. But again, at the same time, we know that Deontay's chinny. I mean, when I think you saw him come up here because Golden Boy was developing him
right
here in Southern California.
Right.
We saw him get touched, and all of a sudden, video disappeared.
It did. You're right.
From some of them, you know, we saw a guy that's, you know, built like me, and he touched him up. So it's. But again, it almost comes with the Tory in the heavyweight division. Everybody that's 200 plus pounds, you know, could arguably hurt anybody else. So
as of right now, you know, it seems that the plan is in motion for the Wilder Fury rematch in February. Mm-hmm. What do you got in that fight?
I think I have Wilder. I don't like the way that Fury's legs have been looking lately. The way he... And I don't know if Top Rank knew this going in and having him signed, but he's just not as responsive as the perfect fight that he did versus Wilder. So I think he, Wilder finally will, and I think we saw it on this fight versus Ortiz, where he's been, he was able to just relax in there. Versus the first fight versus Fury, he was just going in there. He was right hand crazy. He was throwing and throwing and overthrowing it. So somehow fight landed, but I think he didn't fight the right fight. He needs to fight a very boring fight. He doesn't need to chase him as much as he did in the first fight. And I think he will eventually catch him around the 8-9 round if they fight in February, which I don't know. I think Bob will find a way to mess that up.
Do you think that fight's going to sell as well as they're anticipating? Because there was, you know, at least talking about the financial aspect of the sport. Wilder was reportedly making like $20 million for this fight, right. and you know, there was reports, or at least, you know, discussions that PBC and Fox and stuff were going to take a loss on this fight on pay-per-view against Ortiz, but they're hoping that they make it up with the Fury rematch. I mean, do you think that's going to happen?
It'll sell, but I don't think it's going to be ridiculous. I think they need to find a big venue to maybe host this fight, because they need a price of tickets to where people can actually afford them. If they do something like, as a matter of fact, this last fight is a great example. They overpriced the tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you know, as boxing fans, you want to go to this fight, but are you willing to pay the prices that they really had the tickets for? I think a lot of people ended up buying them for half off. I saw Jim Boone, that's a ticket broker, and he's on Twitter a lot, and he was saying that, you know, the tickets are half of face value. Or of course, you know, PBC is notorious for comping tickets, and I heard they comp a lot of tickets, and it was still not a packed house. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, that tells you they have to price it right. I think for the magnitude of a fight it's going to be, they have to pick the right venue. It has to be, I would love it to, you know, to be somewhere like on a Rose Bowl or somewhere where you could really pack the house. Maybe sell, you know, nosebleed tickets for $50, but you'll get asses in seats that way. They have to do it right. If not, people are just not going to go. You're not going to want to spend $5,000 to sit ringside for that fight.
Wasn't there reports that it might be in Vegas? Maybe the MGM Grand or something? I thought I saw something about that recently.
The MGM Grand is so small. The smallest event they can do is maybe T-Mobile Arena. I think they have, what's the other one they use for Chavez Martinez once? They did the college, right?
In Vegas?
Yeah.
Oh, Thomas and Mack Center?
Was it Thomas and Mack?
Yeah, that's where the college is at in Vegas, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, then that's it. Yeah, I think it was a little bigger, if I'm not mistaken. So, again, as long as they price the tickets right and they set a pay-per-view, pay-per-view at a regular $75, I mean, it'll sell. They just shouldn't over-glorify the heavyweight division, because it's not, they can't do what a guy like Anthony Joshua does.
Right. Yeah, selling out Wembley Stadium over there, 100,000 people.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do that. You can't ask for, I mean, Tyson Fury is going to bring his fans, and yes, you know, they're going to sell, but it's not going to be as big.
Right. I get it. And then real quick, just on one name answers, if you can, who wins the rematch, Ruiz or Joshua?
Joshua.
You know, I agree. I've been telling Mike that, and Mike doesn't. Mike's not on my team with that. He think, I, and I like Ruiz too. And I mean, I hope
I like him
for the sake of this.
What's not to like about the kid? Look, man, you got the guy that looks like your next door neighbor, and he won the heavyweight champion of the world. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's legit. Yeah, and then, you know, at least for the sake of the sport, you know, having I mean, look at how much a big deal it was that and everybody argues about, like, oh, first Mexican champion or first Mexican of American descent, whatever the hell, you know, who cares? The guy's Mexican, you know, like, it's an accomplishment. And, you know, at least for the good of the sport, everybody knows that Mexico, Mexicans, Hispanics, especially in the California, Southern California area, love their boxing. And I think for the popularity and, you know, especially the financial side of the sport, I think Ruiz winning is better for the finances of the sport, if you ask me.
I agree. The only thing I want to like, I don't think if you look at the landscape, let's say this Ruiz does work, what type of fight are out there for him? They're going to want to throw him against Deontay Wilder right away.
Yeah.
And of course, a fight versus Deontay Wilder, I mean, Deontay's never going to let him get close to him. And, you know, I think a guy like Ruiz, it'll look like a ridiculous mismatch, you know? Yeah. So, I really hope, again, you can't not root for Andy Ruiz, but I you got to be realistic. I don't think it happens. Again, I don't think Joshua lets him in behind that big stick of a jab he has, and mm-hmm. and he's going to make it a very boring fight, but he's going to go back home with his belt.
Yep. I think that's the conclusion I'm reaching to. And then moving on, obviously, from that main event, the co-main event, Leal Santa Cruz wins his fourth divisional world title in his fourth weight class. He wins the WBA Super World Super Featherweight title. Damn, that's a mouthful. With the unanimous decision win over Miguel Flores. He won by scores of 115, 112, 117, 110 twice. I mean, what'd you think of that fight?
You know what? One thing I do have to bring up with that fight is that on that same night, they fought for that same belt in two different places.
Right.
In Vegas and in California. I don't see, you see, and I'm quick to criticize the WBC.
Mm-hmm.
And rightfully so. They do a lot of stuff that just doesn't make sense. But how could, and it's tough to criticize Leo because I think, I don't know if it's just his team or his persona, but it's very difficult to talk smack on the guy. You know?
Right.
Because he's that nice of a guy. But how are you going to fight on your first time going up in weight and fight for a belt and a super belt, right? Because this is like the main belt for that weight class. Or
right, that, it is, yeah.
The WBA. And not even pay attention to the fight that's actually happened across the street, you know, with Golden Boy. It doesn't make sense. It's a disrespect to the fighters. That's why a lot of these fighters kind of end up, you know, just using the belts for what they are and dumping them later.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's how is that even possible? Again, he fought a guy that's ranked like, what, 140? A box rank?
Yeah, something like that.
How does Leo even and still have the audacity to, you know, floss, pull up the big four ring, four fingers, because now he's a four-time division champion? But of what? I don't know, man. I don't know. And he's still struggling with these guys. It's not like, you know, he's getting in there and knocking these guys out. It's just Leo's doing his regular Leo fight. I feel like every time I watch Leo, I'm watching the same fight over and over.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's a criticism that a lot of people have had about him, especially after this fight, because, you know, it's just, I mean, when he fought Frampton twice and he fought Mahrez, you know, after that, he really hasn't fought, you know, anybody. And then, you know, he gets his fourth title in a fourth weight class. But I mean, and going back to what you said at the beginning, how, you know, is it his persona? Like, you know, what's his deal? I honestly think because, like, you're right. Like, he's a nice guy. I've met him before. I've interviewed him. You know, he's a very humble guy and stuff like that. You know, he doesn't seem like he doesn't seem like he doesn't even say a bad word about anything or stuff like that. But I view him, and I was telling Mike this before we had this conversation, that I view him as like he views himself like as an employee of PBC, and he's just like, oh yeah, it's just my job. So whatever they tell him to do, like, oh, you're gonna fight this guy on this card, he's like, cool. Like he doesn't object to anything. He just says, let's do it. Like, you know, it's like a job.
Yeah, and I get that, but I mean, at the same time, look, man, he's the one that's going in there throwing the punches, so he's almost like faking the legacy. But and you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Ryan Garcia, but now imagine if Ryan Garcia would do something like that. What would the internet do?
You're right.
He'll rip him apart.
Mm-hmm.
Because look, this is little loudmouth kid, and now he has four belts, and is he really a four-time world champion? No. Did he clean up his division? Absolutely not. Is he fighting the Gary Russo Jr.? He's fought Abner Modest, for God's sake, twice. and nothing. And I think he's a hell of a fighter, but he's not really fighting the big fights. And again, it's okay to lose, but losing against somebody, you know, it's worth it.
He did say after the fight, and at least I know he said at the post fight. I don't know if he said like in the ring, but he says he wants Gervonta Davis. He wants Gary Russell Jr., who by the way, are in different weight classes than him. Gary Russell's at 126, and then Tank just moved up to 135, and Leo Santa Cruz just took his belt that he vacated. So does that mean anything, or is that just talk?
It's just at this point, it's just talk. So let's say he does, you know, fight Gary Russell. Now that Gary Russell had a disadvantage, because you know Gary Russell's a really small guy. I even think he's small for 126.
You're right.
So now to fight him at 130 has a disadvantage to him. Tank is Tank. He's not. It seems like Tank is a name to throw out there because they know Floyd's not going to fight him against anybody. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's just all talk, man. Unfortunately, all talk. And I hate for Leo to be that guy. Like I said, he needs to, you know, keep that same energy. Either he's the employee or he's the boss calling out the guys, but call the guys at your division. You know, how come he didn't say, I want to fight, you know, the winner of Cancio, what was the other
Alvarado? Alvarado?
Doesn't come to him. Yeah, Alvarado, I'm sorry. How come he doesn't say, I want to fight the JoJo of the world, the farmers, the Jamel Herrings that are out there? You know, where's that energy?
No, you're right. You're right. You're completely right. And I mean, I think that with Leo, I think he's at the point where, I mean, he's been at the point, but especially now, like, especially that he in his first fight at 130 pounds and getting a world title, one of the, you know, the major world titles, of course. I think his next fight, he has to fight somebody, you know, significant, and preferably another world champion, like, or else people are really going to rain down on him, you know?
Yeah, or a decent name at 130, or bring out a decent guy. But who do you see him arguably fighting at this weight?
I mean, okay, who has a title at 130 right now? Tevin Farmer, does Valdez have a title? Or is he about to fight for a title?
No, Valdez doesn't have a title, so it's Herring. Who else?
Tevin Farmer, Herring, Alvarado. Now he has a secondary WBA.
The Mexican guy.
Oh, Burchell. That's right.
Burchell, yeah.
See, but
that'll be a great fight.
Oh hell yeah! No, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be a fight I would want to go.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think honestly, I think out of all those names, I think Burchell, out of the champions at least, I think Burchell's the best guy. What do you think?
That's the fight that you actually want to see that I think you could make.
The Burchell Santa Cruz?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, as far as fan friendly, I think that's the fight you want to see.
Do you think it'll work though? Is Burchell technically signed to Top Rank, or is he? Isn't he with who's
he's his? With Zanfer.
Zanfer, right? Okay, Zanfer. That's.
I don't know if he's signed with them or he has any type of a promotion deal through ESPN, maybe. But I don't think so. I don't see why they would want to move him. Well, I think they went there for Harry at one point, but again, I don't know.
Right. Well, I mean, like the you know, we talked about the heavyweight division for a lot of minutes at the beginning here, but 130 pounds has, you know, arguably the second best, you know, weight, like in terms of talent, has arguably the second best talent pool there. I mean, you know, 135 is a good talent pool and everything, but 130 with Valdez, Santa Cruz, Tevin Farmer, JoJo Diaz, Alvarado now, even Cancio and Jamel Herring and Burchell and all these guys, like.
Exactly. You don't even have to have a belt. You know, and you can make great fights all around at 130.
No, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I don't know. I hopefully we see these guys actually go at each other. I mean, I know you mentioned Jamel Herring. He calls out guys since he got his title. I mean, he just beat Lamont Roach. You know, it was a tough fight for him, but he, you know, he retained his belt, and he seems to call out guys on social media and on interviews and stuff. He, you know, he seems like he wants to make these fights. I mean, everybody wanted to see Valdez and like Santa Cruz or something because, you know, an all-Mexican showdown, you know, in Southern California. But, you know, they both moved up to 130. They're both at the same weight class. But, I mean, like, are we going to see the same, like, the repeat movie of 126 at 130 for the next 2 years? And then they're both going to move up to 135 and do it all over again?
Yeah. You know what? I would love that fight regardless of what weight division. I think it'll... imagine the fireworks in that fight. I mean, both of these guys have monster energy and... they could throw, I mean, thousands of punches, really.
Right.
They could beat probably Zhu Kan's activity.
That's true. Yeah. And then, you know, perfect segue into that event. There was also another event, the Fantasy Springs Casino on DAZN USA in Indio, California, also on Saturday. The team here at the last round, Mike and I were there covering that fight. I asked Mike the same thing on Saturday. Rene Alvarado stops Andrew Cancio to take his super featherweight WBA world championship at 130 pounds. The fight was stopped, I think, yeah, in the seventh round by the referee. He went to the corner and he was talking to Cancio and then he waves his hands. Would you consider that an upset by Alvarado?
I think so, yes.
Why?
I consider it an upset because it almost seems like Cancio had outgrown that Cancio that fought Alvarado the first time. Yes, Alvarado was beating him on the first fight, but he just seemed like to be a completely different monster. If you would ask me, like, okay, does this Cancio beat have trouble with JoJo? I would say, no, you know what? It'll be a really tough fight, not like the first fight that when JoJo fought him. I thought that Cancio was a completely different monster, especially when and I didn't root for Cancio the first two fights versus the Puerto Rican when he took his belt.
Machado.
Yeah, Machado. So on the first fight, I said, oh, you know, Machado's a big, strong guy. I mean, I've seen Cancio many times. I mean, you and I have seen him many times there at Indio before.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, he's a tough guy, but it's Cancio. And he proved me wrong on the first fight. Second fight, I said, you know what, this is going to be a fluke. Machado's going to come back, take his belt. That's not what he did. He came in like a monster. He was able to, you know, go through that defense, and he was able to put enough pressure on the Puerto Rican where again, he did the exact same thing. So to me, it's like, okay, he's a completely different fighter. He's more dedicated to his craft. He's a beast.
Right.
But that it almost seems like that's what I thought. So going into this fight with Alvarado, I was thinking, okay, we're going to see a great fight, but just not an ass whooping. And that's what we saw. We saw a guy, just a champion, get his ass completely beat by this guy Alvarado. And I don't know, what did you see? Did you think we're going to have a competitive fight?
You know, I obviously, like you mentioned, you know, Cancio stopped Alvarado a couple years ago. He knocked him out. I think it was with an uppercut at that time. I think it was December 2015. And you know, it's not like Alvarado like was coming off a loss, or you know, is like 3-6 in his last 9 fights or something. Like, you know, he's, even though he really hasn't fought any like crazy names, he's been on a win streak. You know, at least to get back into this fight, into whatever the mandatory spot, whatever they want to call it. So I going into that fight, I did think it was going to be more competitive than the first one, but I didn't think it was going to be that, how it turned out like that. I didn't think Cancio was going to get stopped like that. I didn't think he was going to get, you know, TKO'd. I don't know if you're watching that one live or the Wilder one, but like that first round when it first happened, like that was a badass round.
Yeah.
And right after that fight, I remember I was telling Mike, I was like, hey, you know what, this is actually going to be a competitive fight, you know, just based on that first round. And I mean, it was, you know, they were going at it, but Alvarado was just landing, like, seems like the crisper, harder punches. And like you said, like, you know, Cancio's, we've seen Cancio there at Fantasy Springs multiple times. And, you know, especially these last two times, his fans always come out, you know, Blythe is closer to that way anyway. So they show up and all that stuff. But I mean, like, would you call, you know, you talked about it being a fluke, you know, possibly when he beat Machado the first time and they're like, oh yeah, Machado's going to take his belt back. And then he doesn't, he stops him. Do you think that he just caught Machado at like the perfect timing? Because Machado, I mean, everybody knew essentially, now that you look back on it, that Machado was not, shouldn't have been at that weight. That weight cut was just too much for him. Cause he got dropped by the body shots. That's what ended him.
You know what? No, because I think he made weight okay the second go around. He was a bit more prepared. Mentally, he was right for that fight. Cancio was just a better man. So that's why I don't even want to consider, it's just hard to say with this fight, like, you know what, it wasn't a fluke. It was just, you know, Alvarado was just a demon in that fight, but I wasn't expecting that because I seen Alvarado before. We seen him fight JoJo.
Right.
I mean, we seen him in other fights. And then again, Alvarado is just Alvarado. But and again, what we've seen from Cancio lately has just been a completely different fighter.
Right.
A fighter that fights with the purpose and he wants to hurt you. And that's not what we saw. Something almost seemed wrong with him.
Yeah, yeah. I got that feeling, too, that, you know, that something was just off with him. So, but yeah. I think they're going to run it back. I mean, they're essentially both Golden Boy fighters. Right. And I think they're going to run it back since they split the first two. You know, they're going to obviously make it a trilogy. It gives them that excuse. So I think you're going to see them run that back probably sometime early next year, maybe March, April. But, you know, we'll see how it turns out. And also on that card real quick, I know this isn't how you pronounce it, but it's better for marketing purposes. I like it better. Kanzu retains his WBA featherweight title over with the unanimous decision win over Manny Robles III. Did you catch this fight? If you did, what'd you think?
You know what? I did catch it. This is, you know, I've known Manny for a long time. So this is a fight that I really wanted to watch because I wanted to see how he does versus, you know, a legitimate champion. And then I didn't have him winning going in. And you know, obviously we saw what we saw. And I think Manny was just not as developed for these type of fights. So I like what I saw from both, though. Look, the angles that and how do you say his name? Because I always called him Kanzu.
I've always said Kanzu, but I think it's like show. Some I don't know. It's with the, like it. I don't know. It's like show. I heard the announcers. I've heard them say it before, but I think it's funnier and it's better when you say Kanzu.
You know what? I was doing it the other way around. I was calling him Zhu Ken.
I think that's what it is. Yeah, I think you're actually. I think you're actually right. But when he first came on the scene, people were saying Kanzu and this and that, and they started catching on like Kanzu, like, you know, he can do it. So I was like, I'm sticking with that. So I think you're right.
But the angles that this guy gives you are really neat, and I think that's something he's learning from the Cubans up in Florida.
Right.
I like it. He's obviously he reminds me of like sort of like Margarito. He just does not stop throwing punches, but adding that wrinkle to his game was what threw Manny off. Because Manny is and I've always said this about Manny. Manny, if you really study the way Manny Robles fights, he's like a replica of Mikey Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
Manny is waiting to capitalize on your mistakes. He was always trying to punch in between Kanzu, but by the time, you know, he tried, you know, going in after that 1-2, Kanzu was already moving him and hitting him with a 3-4, so that's how he kept fighting him. One problem that I did have with this fight was the scoring. I thought the scoring was perfect. I heard a lot of people criticizing it that the score was way off. I gave Manny Robles one round, mm-hmm. and I believe it was like the third or the fourth. But anything that after that, I couldn't give him anything because yes, it was close, and it wasn't a one-sided fight, but it was a fight where Ken did just a little more in each round. Again, it was close. Each round was very close, but Ken was just a bit better than him. I don't know what you thought about it.
No, I completely agree with that. Yeah, because we were there ringside, and he was just a busy guy. I mean, I think if I remember correctly, I think according to CompuBox, I think he threw the most punches in featherweight history, like 1,500 or something.
Yeah, over 1,500 punches. That's
ridiculous, man. That's more than Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's more than remember Soto Caraz versus the Rooster a couple of months back.
Yeah, so I forgot about the Rooster. Mike mentioned that Saturday. He's like, what happened to the Rooster? You know, he's disappeared, man.
Disappeared.
But, yeah, you're right. Like, I mean, and then, you know, and his fans were showing up there. There was a lot of people from his home country of China. And I, you know, obviously, you know, I don't have any channels or I don't keep an eye on, you know, Chinese media and stuff like that. But him being the only boxing world champion from China at the moment, I'm assuming he's getting mainstream coverage over there. I mean, I know you probably don't you know, keep an eye on that either. I don't, but I you would assume so, right? Because he had a lot of fans there, and they had their flags.
You saw it better than I did. I mean, I think we tend to go to these fantasy spring fights, but they're not always packed.
Mm-hmm.
The only one that could pack that place, you know, is been a couple of fighters. One of them, of course, is Little Ryan.
Right.
And I think the El Matador, Randy Caballero, does a fairly good job.
He was there on Saturday, too.
And the guy from Blythe, too, of course, right. He does a great job at it. But you had all these, Chinese, right, guys that at Fantasy Springs was ridiculous. And it's kind of nice because that's what you want to see. I mean, you gotta have a decent crowd, too. And he performed great for his crowd, so good for him. And I really hope he's a champ for a very, very long time.
Yeah, he's a very humble guy, really cool guy. So, you know, he's exciting to see. So hopefully he keeps going. And then also on Saturday, real quickly, from the Echo Arena in Liverpool, Mike's motherland, you know, he loves talking about his motherland, these fights over here. Every time we start talking about these English fighters, he's all over it, you know, which is cool because, like, you know, he keeps his finger on the pulse over there, you know, a lot more than I do. So, right. He's able to, like, kind of give me the 411 on that, on stuff that I might not know or I might not be familiar with. And then, you know, he'll talk about him. So it's cool. But, you know, we're going to touch on you know, it's a name, obviously, that people know. Callum Smith gets the unanimous decision win over John Ryder and retains his WBA and WBC Diamond Super, whatever, all those titles and stuff like that, by scores of 116, 112, 117, 111, and 116, 112 again. I don't know if you caught this, but they were saying that Callum Smith, you know, arguably lost to John Ryder. He didn't look that good. I mean, did you hear about it? Did you watch it? What'd you think?
I watched it. I heard all the rumors. And you know what? One thing that came up to mind is Canelo.
Right.
Canelo is the new king of opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
This screams out, you know, this is the legacy fight, like he likes to call it. So, here's a chance for him to unify belt as super middleweight, and why not? Everybody was saying that Callum Smith was too much for him. This is a perfect opportunity for him to take advantage of it. Callum Smith didn't look his best. He wasn't fighting necessarily your neighborhood bum.
World class.
But but it was a good enough fight where I'm not sure. It just almost didn't seem like it was himself. If this is the level of fighter that he is, again, all I can think about is Canelo. You better jump on this kid now. You get to beat up on an undefeated fighter.
You're right. And then, you know, Eddie Hearn, who promotes Callum Smith, even said in interviews after, saying he was just like, hey, he was like, you know, maybe this helps Callum Smith's chances. Maybe if Canelo was watching, maybe he thinks like, oh, you know, maybe he's not actually that talented. Maybe I should fight him. So, and, you know, Eddie Hearn was pushing that narrative, which I honestly think was kind of smart, you know, pretty much saying, you know, because, like, if it does happen, and even if Canelo, which he would likely probably be the favorite, and even if it does turn out how everybody expects Canelo wins, stops him, decisions or anything, I mean, Eddie Hearn and Callum Smith get the payday and the exposure, you know?
Absolutely. And look, man, a lot of these UK, it's not like the UK from, like, you know, 10, 20 years ago. These guys could fight. These guys could give you angles. These guys are really, really turning into something special. Shout out to all the guys in the UK, man. They're really making some great, great, great fighters out there right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It'd be sweet to go to a fight out there one day, you know, Wembley Stadium.
Man, I would love it.
That'd be sweet, man. That'd be sweet. I think you're right, though. I think Canelo and his team, Eddie Reynoso, Chepo Reynoso over there, I think they're really looking at Callum Smith now. And Callum Smith's like listed as 6'3". Technically, he shouldn't even be at super middleweight, you know, but, you know, he can obviously make it. But I think Canelo's really looking at that, at him now as a possible opponent, especially after this performance this past Saturday. And you're right, you know, it'd be a unification matchup of some sort at 168 pounds. You know, I mean, Canelo's technically, you know, he's a cash cow right now, of course. But I mean, like, I mean, who in terms of at least name and recognition? I mean, who does Canelo fight? You know, Triple G's there, of course. But I mean, like,
he's trying to avoid that like the plague. So I think this is a perfect fight for him to fight. he's fighting another unified champion. You know, people that don't know boxing, they're going to eat it up, and they're going to say, he's finally fighting a legit fighter. Let's do it. And it'll take away from the GGG fights, which he doesn't want to do.
Yeah, and I can see this fight. I mean, it might be in Vegas, but I can see it being in New York, like Madison Square Garden, just because you'd get the UK fans to be able to come over. So, but, you know, we'll see how that turns out. You know, it's an interesting division right now between 160 and 168 and even 175. But and then previewing this Saturday, the 30th of November, from the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas on ESPN Plus, the app. Oscar Valdez makes his debut at 130 pounds, 26-0 against Andres Gutierrez, 38-2-1. Before, at 126, Valdez made 6 successful defenses of his WBO featherweight world title. Guys against Mariaga, Scott Quigg, Cervania. You know, he's a 2-time Mexican Olympian, Valdez is. You know, what do you think about this fight?
I like the fight. I think it's tougher on paper than what it's really going to be. But it's a good fight just for him to test out the weight. And look, man, the thing is with Valdez, I'm not asking him for much after that fight with Scott Quigg.
Mm-hmm.
I almost don't want to put him out there like a champ or I think the fact that he's still fighting is a win in itself. So
right.
Him continuing to fight now, and I think what he did moving out of 126 was the best thing you could possibly do. And because imagine this version of Valdez fighting what was this kid named that fought for the belt for his old belt?
Shakur Stevenson.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Imagine him. I think Shakur destroys him. I think right now the fact that they're just keeping him busy and you know, continuing his career, I think it's a great thing that his management, Espinosa Boxing, is doing. So, again, these are just stay busy fights. And he still seems like he's progressing and fighting that Eddie Reynoso style that's so big right now in boxing. So, stay busy fight. I think it's a fight where we see it go the full distance, and hopefully we can see some more angles from Valdez. That's what they're trying to do with him.
You're right. And then, you know, this is obviously for the WBO super featherweight world title at 130 pounds, which we know, you know, especially you and I, you know, being fans of the sport, knowing a lot more than the sport than the casual fan. We obviously know that the WBO sanctioning body is heavily associated with Top Rank.
right.
And then we talked about earlier about Santa Cruz, you know, having his titles over there and how, you know, him and Valdez haven't fought and Burchelt's there and all these guys. I mean, like, and then there's also the issue that PBC doesn't acknowledge the WBO on their graphics and all this stuff. They don't even acknowledge that Andy Ruiz has the heavyweight title. You know, so, I mean, do you think that's going to hinder any chances of, like, a Santa Cruz-Valdez unification or anything like that?
Yeah, I think it does. Obviously, these guys don't like working with each other. You see Golden Boy taking their fighters to Top Rank and then, you know, trying to at least make the fight, you know, but this thing of not putting them in the graphic, I think it's only helping them, if anything, because now you talk about it. Oh, he wasn't in the graphic. Oh, you know, this fighter isn't on the graph. So I think people talk about it more than if they were actually on the graph. So I think if I were PBC, I would just put the damn belt on the graph and people stop talking. I think that's all people are doing now. They're talking because they're not on their little graphs.
Right. No, you're right. Yeah. And then, you know, it's all with, you know, in regards to Crawford not being acknowledged either. And then, you know, now Valdez is likely not going to be acknowledged. Ruiz's belt isn't acknowledged. So, I mean, you know, what happens? You know, that's why, you know, I've seen different opinions with people talking about PBC announced that they're going to make their own belts. And even Dana White has said in the past, you know, when he gets into boxing, he's not going to use the sanctioning bodies. I mean, like, you know, what real quickly, what do you think about that? You know, kind of throwing away the sanctioning body belts and starting their own league.
I think it's ridiculous. As much as we hate sanctioning bodies, let's admit we need them. The problem is the additional belts that they give. the minute a fighter, even if he gets a diamond belt, their purse is a lot of times even double, because now they have a belt, now they have a name on their head, now somebody else wants that recognition that they have.
Right.
So we need them. I think it's ridiculous to try to take them out of the equation. I think they piss us off when they do stuff that, like, you and I don't like the Huichol belt or the yeah. diamond belt or Dickard's belt.
I thought that was your favorite, man.
Like the YouTuber fight. That pisses us off, but at the end of the day, we do need them. We do need to recognize a champ, and that's all.
I thought those were your favorite belts, Huichol, Mayan belt.
Huichol belts are great for, like when I go to a local quinceañera and stuff like that. You know? They're really axing my snakes in.
Oh, man. And then also on that card, Carl Frampton against Tyler McCreary. Everybody kind of can see the writing on the wall here. Valdez and Frampton on the same card. You know, they're exposing them to the same type of audience because they want to put them against each other. So maybe sometime next year. Do you think that's the plan?
Yeah, I hope that's the plan. I was hearing something about Carl Frampton versus Herring. I don't like that fight for Carl Frampton. I think Herring is too big for him. On the other hand, I think Carl Frampton and Oscar Valdez, I think it's a hell of a fight. Mm-hmm. Look, they're both smaller guys, monsters at what they do. And I love it. I love it. So I really hope that's the plan. Not the other stuff that I was hearing for you know, Frampton versus Herring.
Right. I mean, yeah, we'll see how it turns out. But Frampton did, you know, has given some pretty good fights. You know, he lost to Warrington, but that was a good fight. You know, he fought Santa Cruz twice. So you know, Frampton's been in some good fights. So you know,
I love that guy. He's really fan friendly fighting style he has.
Also on that card, Arnold Barboza Jr. Goes up against William Silva for the NABF Junior Lightweight title. Who do you got in that fight?
Yeah, Barboza. Barboza's a monster, man. I don't know if you saw the fight versus Mike Alvarado.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah.
That kid's just, and I know Mike Alvarado's a veteran, but just what he's able to do in this fight, I think he's one of top ranks. Best kept secrets. I really think he's really going to turn it up. He's going to be a great opponent for these guys that are at 140 pounds. He's really, really, really good kid. I'm really looking forward to him.
And then, real quick, this is more Mike's card right here. But there's also a DAZN card this weekend. I mean, DAZN's pumping him out, regardless if you know what the fights are or not. But from the Casino de Monte Carlo Saya Medicine in Monte Carlo. Monaco on DAZN. Alexander Besputin against Razhab Budiv. I don't know. Mike always takes these names. I never say this crap. For the vacant WBA World Welterweight title. Oh, wow. Welterweight.
Well, wait, this is a legitimate fight then.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's for the vacant. I mean, I don't know who the guy is. I mean, I would. It almost seems like an NABF type of fight.
Yeah.
Based on their records, but. I'm kind of intrigued now.
They're both they're both undefeated, 13-0 against 12-0.
Yeah, so we're going to watch the fight just because if this fight doesn't live up to the expectation, we're going to both beat the shit out of Mike.
Yeah, he's definitely not welcome back to the last round. I'm going to start doing this show by myself. You're going to have to call in every single week now, so I'm going to replace him, you know. Instead of a UK and a Mexican, it's going to be two Mexicans now. But you know, the last, you know, 2 minutes that we have, you know, is there anything you want to touch on that's in the news right now before we wrap up?
No, I think you pretty much covered everything, man. Just of course, thank you for having me. Look, man, hope whoever's on here, whoever listens, follows me on my Instagram, you know, at Mr. Boxing Guru, same thing on Twitter at Mr. Boxing Guru. And of course, I think you already know I started helping a few fighters. I help Adidas Boxing scout a couple of fighters. So I started doing that now. So that's
shout them out. Shout out the fighters.
What was that? I have Versito Hesta. I have Devaca. I have a couple other local fighters that I'm working that are a little smaller. Francisco Ochoa. Who else? Who else is out there right now? Of course, we got Jamel Herring that's out there. So we got a couple of. We got, of course, Abner Mares, which is our main guy. He's an ambassador for boxing. I don't see, and I hope he doesn't fight anymore. But yeah, those are the good guys that we have right now, and we have some that might be coming in soon. So yes, a couple of fighters that I'm working on. So if you guys have it, just check out Adidas Boxing Gloves wherever you guys can find them. If you have any questions, ask away.
You're right. Yeah. And so like you said, people, if you're looking for Adidas boxing, apparel, gloves and all that stuff, you're the guy for that. You're the guy who can connect all absolutely. Those dots. So like you said, people want to follow you at Mr. Boxing Guru, and that's on Twitter, on Instagram and all that stuff.
That's true. I have Twitter, on Instagram. I have a like page on Facebook as well. Same thing, Mr. Boxing Guru. And of course, the Mr. Boxing Guru podcast. I try to do, I think every Monday when I have time. I'm not as consistent as you are, but yeah, I try to do mine as well.
And then one more thing. And then, I'm sure people have seen these shirts, because obviously you created them, the boxing and chill shirts. If you guys are out there listening and if you guys have seen those shirts out in the boxing sphere, the boxing world, they're usually red shirts with white lettering that says boxing and chill, kind of a playoff of the Netflix and chill. Mr. Boxing Guru Sal is the guy behind those shirts. I know you're not, in the shirt game right now, but are they coming back? The fans want to know.
You know what? I'll try and make another comeback for him. But not only that shirt, I made the Mexicans for Golovkin one, mm-hmm. which that one was, I think that one was even on the New Yorker, if I'm not mistaken. They did a huge article on that. I did the Chapolovkin shirt as well. I did one for Lemieux. So I've done a couple of fights, but the most popular one, like you said, was the Boxing and Chill, and of course the Mexicans for Golovkin. That one was. I mean, you would see those in the Los Angeles alleys, duplicated out there, just being stealing my copyrights. So.
No, you're right, man. But if they're coming back, let me know, man. We'll pick some up. But
I got you. I got you, brother.
But once again, Sal, I want to thank you. Mike does too. I'll thank him on behalf. But thank you for saving me this week. Thank you for saving the show this week as my co-host. And like you said, you have your podcast, Mr. Boxing Guru podcast, which is available on pretty much all the major platforms, Apple, Spotify, all that stuff. Your social media is at Mr. Boxing Guru. We see each other all the time at the fights, at the events, and I'm sure you'll be on the show once again in the future, or if you ever want one of us to jump on yours, we're right there. We're just a phone call away, man.
Absolutely, man. Thank you so much for having me, man. It was a lot of fun.
You got it, man. I'll give you a call right after this.
All right, brother.
All right, take care. All right, guys. Well, I did this show alone in studio, but luckily Sal helped me out. So, Mike, if you're listening to this, never come back. You're out. You're disqualified. But thanks again, guys, for listening to episode 58 of the Last Round podcast. Follow the show on social media at The Last Round 12. And make sure to listen to us next week as we review this week's fights, preview all the news, touch on all the stuff in the boxing world. So once again, I'm Danny Z. For Sal, Mr. Boxing Guru, who saved me this week, and Mike, who's absent, this is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe.